Everyone, I'd like to call the House Legacy Finance Committee to order. Welcome everybody, and to this remote hearing. And I'd like Mr. O'Neill, will you, the clerk, please call the roll.
Of course, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Jordan.
Jordan present.
Jordan present. Representative Green.
Present.
Representative Green present. Representative Ackum.
Present.
Representative Ackum present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Anderson present. Representative Bowe.
Bowe present.
Representative Bowe present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Christensen present. Representative Hassan. Representative Murphy.
Murphy present.
Representative Murphy present. Representative Nelson. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Erdahl present. Representative Wazlowick.
Wazlowick present.
Representative Wazlowick present. Representative Zhang.
Here.
Representative Zhang here, present. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. We have a quorum. We're open for business. Good morning, everyone. We'll start with the minutes. Vice Chair Jordan, would you be willing to pass the minutes for our February 23rd meeting?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. Any questions in regards to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes have been approved. Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. It's snowing pretty heavy here right now in St. Paul outside the window. So, we probably wouldn't even seen that if we'd been in a normal hearing room. But I suppose up north, Mary, you've got feet of snow. But I'm
now
excited.
It's just
to...
drizzling down.
Okay. Well, I'm excited this morning to have an opportunity. You know, we've been kind of moving through the different areas of that we work on, and we've invited people that have been recipients of legacy funds to kind of give us an update of what's going on, what they're working on, and we're moving through the bill and just all the different things that are done. And one of our guests this morning is the humanities. And they do a lot of different things for us, and we're going to hear about that today. And then maybe we can hear what is going well and what maybe we can do better. But it's just amazing that they so many things that they do. They have programs themselves that they do, and they also do a lot of our grants are handled through and go through the humanities. So, with us this morning we have the CEO, Mr. Lindsay. I've worked with him in his other capacities prior to this one, and I know you're doing a great job here. So, Mr. Lindsay, please go ahead when you're ready, introduce yourself, and welcome to the Legacy Committee.
Chair Lilly, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you as well. My name is Kevin Lindsay. My last name is spelled L-I-N-D-S-E-Y, and I have the privilege and honor of serving as the CEO of the Minnesota Humanities Center. I started in that position in June of 2019, and there's been a whirlwind of activity that has happened at that point in time. We have prepared a slideshow for you. Also joining me today and handling the slideshow is Laura Benson. When she's not handling the slideshow, she is coordinating our efforts on grant making. And then also with us today is Casey B. Murray. And she helped on the slide presentation, but also she helps and leads our efforts on strategic partnerships throughout the state of Minnesota. So first off, if you've not had a chance to see the Minnesota Humanities Center building, we're located at 987 Ivy Avenue. This is a little bit of an old photo, and we want to thank the legislature for providing bonding funding the prior biennium. So the lush scenery has actually now been replaced with lights and new scenery. We needed to do that to take care and renovate a historic jewel of Minnesota architecture, which is the home that we serve. And this is the last standing building in the old Children Gillette's Hospital complex on the east side of St. Paul. This building has always been a place of healing. The Children Gillette's Hospital complex, they use this building to treat children with polio. So it has a long, rich history of serving Minnesotans. So if we could go to the next slide, I'll provide an overview sort of what we're going to talk about today. We'll talk a little bit about the impact that the Minnesota Humanities Center is having all throughout Minnesota, not just within Grant making. We've invited three grantees to kind of talk about the work in which they're doing to give you as a legacy committee a flavor of the type of work that is happening because of your work and your efforts on the legacy committee. We're going to talk a little bit about the cultural heritage grants in this past session. The dollars that have been made available, we are just ready to announce the totality of the first round of cultural heritage grants, and we'll talk a little bit about how that is going, and then we'll open it up for any questions that you might have of either our grantees or of ourselves. So with that overview, we were founded in 1971 when the National Endowment for the Humanities began funding state humanities programs. The National Endowment for the Humanities, National Endowment for the Arts, were started in the late 60s. And one of our favorite sons, at that time, Vice President Humphrey, was one of the people who was leading the efforts to create these opportunities, these organizations, the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities. At that point in time, technology was kind of racing ahead. They had this strange show called Star Trek with William Shatner, with this idea that you could hold something in your hand, and that device that's holding on your hand, you'd be able to know exactly where you were on a planet, and you'd be able to find another direction, right? It seemed strange in the late 60s that you could even think about having a device like that, right? 50 years later, all of us can't think about not having our phone telling us exactly where we are on the planet. Again, 50 years ago, there were strikes. Unfortunately, with the Vietnam War, and there was a conflict as it relates to how we think about war, how we support war, what is the world standing. And unfortunately, today we kind of find ourselves in another potentially conflict around the world. We also found ourselves, I think 50 years ago, seeking to ensure all that could be included within the democracy, and what would that mean? And again, we're facing some of those same issues of ensuring that all can participate within democracy in a way. So for us, we seek to connect the past to the present, future, to bring people together, to increase understanding of what is going on within various communities, and hopefully that they can find and spark change for the democracy that they think they should have as a people. We're not an entity that puts its thumb on the scale and says this is the direction in which you should go, either to the east or to the west, north or to the south. But we do seek to facilitate people hearing the perspectives of others and creating space for those individuals to come to solutions that make sense for them. For us, our vision is a just society that's curious, connected, and compassionate. We like to think of this coming to conversations with an open heart, an open mind to authentically listen to one another. Connected, how we see ourselves tied to a garment of mutual destiny, what's impacting one impacts the other. And compassionate, motivated beyond empathy toward action, to actually realize this opportunity to collectively work together to see commonalities. So if we go to the next slide. This is our strategic framework. Don't worry, there will not be a quiz on it. In the first couple of months on the job, this was the first task given to me, is to create the strategic framework. You've heard me talk about the vision and mission, and that's kind of the blue and the maybe dark blue circle kind of document in front of you. Off to the far right, you'll see our six strategic priorities. Lifelong learning at the top. And when we talk about lifelong learning, well, we do a lot of work within K-12 institutions. We also do work in colleges. So Representative Erdahl, as a college professor, you probably appreciate Trey Trevant leading an effort called Third Way Civics, in which we have partnered with a college in Florida, a college in Indiana, and two here in Minnesota, to think about a different way in which we could talk about Third Way Civics. This effort, being funded by the Templeton Foundation, is an opportunity to bridge what some refer to in our society as a red-blue divide. How can we teach civics in a way in college to eliminate any division within college classrooms. Statewide accessibility, we take this very seriously. We understand, and Chair Lilly mentioned that I formerly worked within state government. I'd heard on many occasions that some folks felt that everything happened within the Seven County Metro and they were left for the scraps and that they weren't heard, they weren't really part of that. So for us, we bring a great deal of intentionality to ensure that we're serving the entirety of the state. We bring that lens for programming, we bring that lens with grant making. And I think you'll see that showing up in the way in which we handed out grants under the two federal relief bills, CARES and then ARP, and then also how we're doing cultural legacy grants. Public engagement, again, intentionality that we're bringing here so people can see systems or communities in which they operate and they can be actively engaged and participating within it. I mean, obviously, when we think of the humanities, we think of the stories that we tell ourselves to make sense of our families, make stories that make sense of ourselves as individuals in our own unique humanities. But there's also storytelling which happens, which helps us understand civilizations or societies or the government systems and structures that we operate within. So within that, we tend to try to sprinkle in activities all throughout the year to address that issue. Now, within humanity support, obviously, there is funding that we give out, and we appreciate the work of the legislature in providing us with an opportunity for cultural legacy grants. But we also, as an affiliate of the National Endowment of the Humanities, we also seek to create opportunities for organizations and individuals in Minnesota to be made aware of, knowledgeable, and to compete for grants that are handed out by the National Endowment for the Humanities. And I will tell you that every 6 months, I see a list of organizations here in the state of Minnesota that have received funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities. A lot of them are colleges, but we try to seek a partnership with the colleges and community organizations because public humanities is something that more colleges are embracing, NEH is embracing. And I will tell you, in my former job and this job now, community wants to be involved within those spaces. So again, we like to be that bridge builder, that connector, that convener in that respective space. So let's go to the next slide here. Talking about democracy demanding the wisdom and vision from its citizens. This is language that you actually will see within the National Endowment for the Humanities enabling legislation. And we think that this is critically important, that it's a two-way sort of operation, two-way street in which information is flowing from government, from organizations, institutions, and also that information is flowing from citizens to those decision makers. Again, that's how good decisions are made. When we had a conversation about civic engagement in the last couple of years here within state government, some of the commissioners or leaders within that organization, some being physicians or professionals, would say, again, you can't treat a patient unless the patient is engaged with you. And sometimes we, unfortunately, as public officials, fall prey to thinking we know all of the answers without authentically listening to the people who are impacted by the decisions that we make. So we can go to the next slide. So a couple of programs that we've been involved in kind of in this broad space. With Malice Toward None, an opportunity to bring Mitch Perlstein from the Center for American Experiment, someone who might be viewed as an individual and kind of in the red camp, with some individuals within the blue camp, with this idea and kicking it off with Malice Toward None. How can we bridge these particular prickly conversations that we sometimes are having to kind of find common ground to find solutions? The big sort of story circle that you see there with the individuals in a larger circle, and then there are three or four individuals sort of in the middle. This is a technique from communities, indigenous communities, some communities from the African American community, of how we can see ourselves united within a circle and being able to be intimate and listening in and then sharing back out. So you'll see in a lot of the respective programs that we use this idea of a story circle and being able to authentically and intimately listen in with people. Democracy Then and Now, esteemed panel there, individuals, Professor Kloppenberg from and Professor Moody Adams there. I don't know if you could read that. I know the text is a little small, it's a different color there. Scholars from a national lens, talking about where we are within the democracy in our own. Tad Johnson from the University of Minnesota, giving us a different perspective, local perspective, but also an indigenous perspective as it relates to the state of democracy. Some things about sort of exploring the self, SOAR, the writing retreat, November 6th and 7th, led by an outstanding panel of Hmong women, and an opportunity to have a retreat over 2 days to kind of explore what does it mean to be a Hmong woman? What does it mean to be a woman within society? What does it mean to sort of push back on sort of conformity and conventionality, which is sometimes voiced upon us regardless of our race, ethnicity, or gender? And how do you find your authentic self? So again, with the retreat center that we have, the building in that very first slide, we have some time to sit back and reflect and have some opportunities for such activities. And then in the bottom corner there, and then we'll go to the next slide, we also partner with the governor's office. And we partner with the governor's office to help the governor select Minnesota's Poet Laureate. So this past fall, we had an opportunity to partner with the governor, a little different day than it is today with the snow. It was nice bright and warm that day. And we got to announce Professor Gwen Westman as our current Minnesota Poet Laureate. And she coordinates with us, St. Paul Friends of the Library, opportunities and events, again, all throughout the potential state, spreading the power and beauty of poetry within Minnesota. Go to the next slide. We also, as I mentioned earlier, do a fair amount of work within schools and publishing books. Here is kind of a smattering of some of the books that we have been a part of. On the far left, you will see the American Indian Youth Literature Award. We're very proud of the fact that the book, Ella Cora de la Cora, and the book on our own, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, have just recently won another national award. We're getting interest in republishing those books, not just within Minnesota, but outside of Minnesota. I've had the good fortune, as you can see, kind of in the middle. Looks like I probably need to do a little running there, but, you know. reading to kids all throughout Minnesota. And I can tell you there's no greater joy than taking some minutes out of your day if you're ever feeling depressed, going into a kid's classroom and reading books is a wonderful thing. So I appreciated being able to read chapters out of those books and having the kids ask questions, be really engaged. And then we give books to these respective classrooms for free. So again, this is part of our respective effort to increase literacy and then also to give opportunities and rich excitement for kids within books. Adote Memory Map, Crossroads that you see in the middle, that's a partnership with the Somali community in which we had young Somali authors at the time in which they did the writing. They were all in high school. Now they have gotten a little older, a little bit more mature within college. We'll see if we have a version two, kind of the college edition there. Blues Vision, Minnesota Book Author of the Year, or a Hall of Famer, I think is what the award is, for Alex Pate. He was the editor within Blues Vision. Some of you know him because of his work with the movie and book Amistad. So this is a coordinated effort of variety of different perspectives within that book on Blues Vision. And then Show and the Northern Lights Dragon, we're now partnering with a quartet to bring that book to a musical version and then taking that musical version back into schools. So again, a couple of examples of what we're doing there. We can go to the next slide. And again, we're also engaged with educators and scholars and communities to identify ways in which we can find more ideas and more solutions to impact positive outcomes within schools. So on the far left, you see us kind of brainstorming ideas for paraprofessionals. As many of you are probably aware, Because of your work here at the legislature, there's a teacher shortage, and there's been some effort to be more intentional in hiring or creating pathways for paraprofessionals to become teachers. So we spent some time having an educator institute specifically on that respective issue. We sometimes have field trips where we go and see various locations. So some of you are aware of the Bedote field trip. So this is three locations within Ramsey County, and we look at those locations from the perspective of Dakota individuals or Dakota Nation individuals. And that's an opportunity for educators to come back and have materials to broaden the way in which they talk about history and culture within Minnesota. In the middle there, that Realizing Wakanda, this was an opportunity for us to partner with the African American Leadership Forum, 2-day conference for administrators, teachers, all adults within buildings, community members, parents, and students to talk about how we can realize Wakanda, realize a better outcome for African American students in the state of Minnesota. We go to the next slide. Let's go to talk about legacy funding at this time. And that kind of gives you the broad picture, so some of the things that we're doing outside. Within legacy funding, we receive and we appreciate the funding provided by the Minnesota legislature, $1.25 million for this current biennium for each year. And out of that, we create a wide variety of programming. Sometimes we tackle difficult issues, and just recently, I kind of give you an example of kind of that spectrum. So right after the death and murder of Mr. George Floyd, we did a 4-part community series called How Can We Breathe, which we not only looked at the incident of death at the hands of police officers, but we also looked at gun violence within the Black community. We looked at issues of education. We looked at how arts and culture could reshape how African Americans could participate within the democracy. This past week, we had 3 events. I had a chance to interview Thomasina Petras, and if you ever get a chance to hear Thomasina, definitely do so. Amazing voice. You talked about her career and her artistry and sort of playing Billie Holiday and various people from a historical perspective. We also talked about with Takumba Aiken about the variety of murals all throughout Minnesota that he has created in his art. And then we also had a program called The Essence of Black Joy. And why do I mention that? Because sometimes it's important to, again, show the whole spectrum, the whole totality of what it means from a cultural or from a humanity perspective. And that type of program, that type of effort, those are the type of things, the prior book projects, which I was talking about, those are the type of things which we're doing and creating within the funding that we receive. And we're very grateful for that. For grant funding, we have historically received funding to support museums. And it has recently, in the last couple of years, become more competitive as opposed to a direct pass-through where the legislature has identified who the museum should be for an amount. Again, we appreciate that. That is a sizable amount of sort of the grant administration that we provide. Civics programs. We have typically identified civics programs, or I should say, the legislature has identified the civics programs upon which we are then to provide funding for. So it's not competitive. Cultural identity and heritage, this current biennium, it's 2.5 for each year of the biennium. And this is a relatively new area for the Minnesota Humanities Center. And again, we really appreciate, and I'll give you coming attractions, I think we're just really kind of scratching the surface of the demand and the desire out there in this space. So if we could go to the next slide. Okay. This is the nice thing, I guess, about having text in Zoom, because I'm understanding that Brian is having some technical difficulties. So we're going to advance ahead. And I am going to yield the floor to Sharif Hared from Somali Community Resettlement Services. And he'll talk a little bit about what is going on there. So Chair Lilly and the members of the committee, I give you Mr. Sharif Hared.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Thank you very much. Good presentation. Mr. Hared, are you there for us?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Good morning, and please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready. Thank you.
Yeah. My name is Abdullah Harriet Sharif. I am a director of the Somali Community Resettlement Services. I work with the organization SCRS, Somali Community Resettlement Services. And this organization has been established in 1999 in mostly southeastern Minnesota, especially Rochester, Olmsted County. We primarily work with that southeastern Minnesota, but last couple of 5 years, we have an office in Minneapolis also. We do some works with the Hennepin County, but this program mostly focuses into the East Africans or the Somali refugees, especially even though we have some Oromos, we have some Kenyans and some other Ethiopians. Other Ethiopian, I'm talking about the Tigrinyan, Amharic, all those areas. So, if we talk about this program we started actually a couple of years. Last 2 years, we were doing about cultural language, cultural heritage, or the learning about we have been facing two things. One will be cultural differences. The refugee who've been here come as old or as a family, and the kids who born or grew up in here. So we have a huge differences that they don't even understand one another for those two, actually, whether it's the parents or the children or maybe or the youth. So what we created about the cultural education or cultural understanding, that means kids who born here to know about their cultural background, whether it's the East African, whether it's Oromos or Somalis and other Ethiopian community. So what we created about a class for last actual year was the Zooming because of the pandemic for two areas that we were projected. One with the Faribault area, which is Rice County, and Rochester in Olmsted County also. So those two classes has been running a weekly classes that has been educated about their cultural language, which is the Somali language first, and the cultural, it included also the dances. And other things that they need, some basic include about the religion and what the other religions. And I know some of the East Africans are Christians and Muslims. So to basically understand about how it come to that and started on those religions. So we have those two classes. And at the same time, the parents also, we had classes that we can educate about the Minnesota. I know the weather is not welcoming, but there are so many other things, good things going on in Minnesota, such as the ESL classes, accessories that they can work in. And I know Somali women and actually some of the elders are difficult to go to exercises usually. So we encourage them to walk around it in order to continue and see about or control their health diets. So we had took that classes that for the kids was very much interesting because of they don't know the language. They may speak it, but they don't know about how to write, how to read in their language in order to understand their background cultures. And that class was very successful because of they understand, they know it, they read it. And at the same time, it's also it's another language because of when you are going to the college, it's very helps with that you may have at least to know some other language, even though you don't speak, but you have to write it. We also started this year another class that we could make sure understand about the service providers, such as the county employee, public health, well, schools, and other service providers to know about the basic language in Somalis. We have difficulties about the interpreters and the language barrier. So in order to make sure about each person who has a service provider to understand the basic language of the Somali. So we were teaching about the terminology when the person comes, what you want to do, who you looking for, are you have an appointment. So we've been seeing about this class, it was very success. If you go to the Rice County and somebody from the mainstream sitting there asking you, do you have an appointment in Somali language? So the mothers, the fathers, the people who don't speak, or the refugees who don't speak the language for English, are very excited to understand and say, hey, I have an appointment. And then what appointment do you have? So this class also started and is very successful so far. And at the same time, those the kids, especially for the Somali youth, are learning about their cultural dancing, because we have Somali dancing going on where the kids understand and like it actually to join it. So we getting so many people enrolling every day. The challenge we have, for example, the capacity, what I mean about that, we've been projected about maybe 2-3 classes. And we've seen overwhelming about so many people are already enrolling. So it's beyond our capacity. So this year we increased the classes, we increased about the teachers that we have, and we want to actually tackle on those challenges. It has a good outcome because mothers and those kids are making out to understand. For whether the writing or we see in some of the papers that comes from the county out in Somalis. So the Somali youth don't know it and didn't know it how to read and write Somali. So now we see at least 2 people, close to the 75 people who have been learning about their own language, how to write and how to read. So that's one of the good outcomes. The second outcome also is the mainstream people who worry about to learn about this culture. So we've seen about the number of people who enroll in our classes in Rochester and Faribault. So I know that my time is very limited. So this is I'm going to give you an overview. That's what we do. And this is, guys, actually this program for the legacy program or project is the game changing about that we have been seen. I've been in Minnesota last 18 years. So last 2 years was different for me because of this class has been make a huge difference for both the refugees or immigrants or the mainstream for both. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. It's interesting to hear the story and what you're working on, and you know, it's in outreach all over the state of Minnesota. Mr. Lindsay, who did you want us to go to next?
I think that we want to go to Melissa Olson.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Ms. Olson, please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you so much. My name is Melissa Olson. I just want to say good morning to CEO Lindsay, members of the committee, my fellow grantees. Thank you so much to Mr. Hared for sharing his important work. Very inspiring. Again, my name is Melissa Olson. I am the deputy director at Migizi Communications. I am a citizen of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and I live here in Minneapolis. Migizi is a nonprofit serving American Indian youth, providing a strong circle of support that nurtures the educational, social, economic, and cultural development of American Indian youth. And as we know, they just need a lot of support right now. Some of the feedback that we've even gotten from Minneapolis Public Schools is that something like 69% of ninth graders are not on track to graduate, and they've struggled over the past 2 years during the pandemic. So we are very much there trying to support students in urban school districts. I want to talk a little bit about Migizi's founding. Migizi was founded in 1977 by Native students from the University of Minnesota and by journalists. And the mission of our organization at that time was to combat the inaccurate stereotypes of American Indians in the news media. And I have so much respect for our forebears at Migizi because they did exactly that. They really worked hard to make Native people in Minnesota visible. And the way that they did that was to come together, form this organization, and for the first 15 years of the organization's life, produced a weekly half-hour radio show, a news and information radio show that was by hook or by crook distributed across all of these community radio stations, tribal radio stations, and by 1982 would become the first nationally syndicated Native American news and information program broadcast over the national public radio satellite, and did that with some help from friends and colleagues at NPR. But, you know, that history, which is so important to who we are, was literally sitting in boxes 2.5 years ago. 35 boxes in a utility closet being lovingly cared for, but all on old school magnetic reel-to-reel tape. And I had the opportunity through our president, Kelly Drummer, to begin work on that project in earnest with the support of the Minnesota Humanities Center. So critical to us just being able to get a start, right? We didn't, you know, we could only see, you know, it was on the cover of these tapes. And what was on the cover told us that this was a huge part of the history of our community in Minneapolis. Members of the committee may know that, you know, the Minneapolis urban Indian community is one that throughout the 1970s had this huge impact on Native communities and American politics all across the country. And so much, you know, we could look at those tapes and say so much of what people were talking about, thinking about, was collected in this show, which is really first of its kind. So we applied for a Humanities Center, a legacy grant through the Humanities Center, a mini grant, just $5,000 just to start. And we were able to say, you know what? We can do this. We can do this. We can digitize these tapes. We took 24 of them. We got a great audio consultant who said it's doable. It's healthy enough, right? It's technically possible. And once we were able to listen back a little bit and share with our community what we had heard, we really picked up steam and gained momentum and put in for this larger cultural heritage grant. And that was like March, April of 2020. As members of this committee will also know that in May of 2020, when George Floyd was murdered by police, our building was one of those buildings that was lost in the fire and unrest on Lake Street at Hiawatha. We literally got those boxes out the day before our building burned down. And I can remember going on social media, wanting to explain to friends, we want to preserve this archive because these are stories that are so important to our community about who we are as a community, about what we've done, what we've overcome. So many of our efforts at just being made visible. And that was something that we needed to add to what was happening in that moment. And we were so proud that we were able to do that. Pieces of those archives already started to hit the airwaves on NPR and other places. So what we've been able to accomplish with the support of the Humanities Center is we have now digitized all 1,200 pieces of our archive. There were so many cool discoveries along the way. There were photos. There were slides in those boxes we had no idea were there. We've been able to digitize something like 868 of those slides. We've been able to just recapture that history. So it's all safely now digitized and we're able to begin in earnest to listen back and remake new material from the old. One of the things that we were able to do with this funding was leverage support from Augsburg University. When we needed a place to move those boxes after the fire, Augsburg University and their wonderful archivist, Stuart Van Cleve, who I can't say enough about, said, "What do you need?" I said, "I really need a place for these boxes to live." And he said, "You know what? We've got empty classrooms because of the pandemic. You bring them over here." And we did. And awesome. Then, yeah. So I want to thank you. I could probably talk for a whole 20 minutes and eat up a bunch of time with the committee this morning. But the Humanities Center has absolutely been a huge supporter and instrumental in being able to tell the story of a community that has been so impactful throughout our state. And to be able to share that with the next generation of media makers through our organization is a huge honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Olson, and very timely what you're, you know, talking about, and preserving that that's priceless. That's great. Mr. Lindsay, then Mr. Young, then is that who you have in mind?
Yes, and I just want to be mindful of time. Okay. How much time do we have?
We're kind of planning until like 9:20, but I know there's member questions, and then
okay.
Yeah.
What I would suggest is, let me go through the remaining of our slides and then sort of end with Mr. Zhang.
Okay, sounds great.
Yeah.
So sounds great.
Let's go to the next slide. So this is a quick at a glance. I talked about federal relief funding, CARES, ARP. So you'll see that. You'll see cultural identity grants from the prior biennium in the middle. And then you're just seeing the very first round of grants for 2021 for the current biennium that we're in. So again, we are showing you this map here, and this is just the cultural heritage grants and the ARP grants. It does not include museums or civic programs. We would add those and there would be even more parts of Minnesota that would be covered. But I just want to give you a quick glance of sort of the breadth and the reach of sort of what's going on. We could go to the next slide. We bring a lot of intentionality of co-designing with community. You've heard here powerful testimony, the importance of having some small grants just so people can see the opportunity to expand and to grow, being very intentional with independent review panels, reaching into a wide variety of communities to make sure all voices are heard, a wide range of projects, which I'll talk about in the next slide. But we're only awarding about a third of all of our requests that are coming in. So if we quickly go to the next slide. That collaboration with community, that state ethnic councils, Council on Disabilities, that resulted in virtual office hours for folks to ask questions, written surveys of how we're doing within that. The grant size, again, quick, responsive, but also realizing that there's some that should be larger. And again, the review panel's there. If we go to the next slide. A couple of quotes here for you to review at your leisure, just on the process. And again, this was one of the things that I had found being in state government. Sometimes a process could be more intimidating than we sometimes think, and being able to work intentionally with ambassadors within communities can break down some of those barriers. We go to the next slide. Documentaries, cultural practices, beliefs, self-identity. Within documentaries, these are going to be some of the projects which are forwarded, radio programs, or I guess what we call them now, podcasts. Those will be within a variety of different cultural celebrations, and then a wide variety of educational grants will also be provided within this mix of cultural heritage. We go to the next slide. The brokering of the language in the House and the Senate, there wasn't a specific hard number which was identified by race or ethnicity, but I did appreciate the language which was given in a compromise. So we did bring some intentionality in reaching out to the communities identified in that way. And this is a rough sketch as it relates to other could be individuals who identified, such as myself. I typically identify as African-American, but I can trace lineage to indigenous people on both sides of my mom and dad's side of the family. So if we go to the next slide. So again, this is this point of just the amount and just the demand. So if you take a look at the left, this is really the 2 year prior biennium. So about 5 million in requests, we awarded 1.6. The current first year of the biennium, we're awarded 2.3, but we had 7 million in requests. And we have not opened the door for the second year yet. So my sense is this ratio of 3 to 1 is going to hold going forward. I will obviously let you know afterwards when we get the final results in, but that's the trend line. We go to the next one. And then I will yield the floor to Brian, and we can end there and then ask questions. I see Representative Erdahl also has his hand up. We have not put on our website yet, but if you have constituents that want to get there first in line, there's an email address for Laura Benson, and we can make sure that as soon as it's posted on the website, it's ready to get going, that we can provide that information.
Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. I do see Representative Erdahl. I'm just going to hold off on your question, if that's all right, and get Mr. Zhang, and then we'll get to questions. And I have some of my own as well. Mr. Zhang, please introduce yourself, and good morning, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
Good morning. I do apologize, you know, one of those times where you turn on your laptop, and then everything has to restart over, and then you come back again, and it Now you have to re-upload zone again and restart it, and you go, oh, it doesn't work the way you want it. But thank you so much for having me today. My name is Dr. Brian Zhang. I am one of the Hmong community members and here at the Twin City. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for this morning. Thank you for everyone for all the things that you do for our diverse community. So I very, very appreciate on behalf of not only myself and not only just the Hmong community, but also all the diverse community here at the state of Minnesota. Thank you from the bottom of our heart. I just want to share a little bit about the impact of this grant, how we help the Hmong Archives, you know, and just give you an idea. The Hmong Archive has been here in the state of Minnesota for over 20 plus years, but they never have any resource how to reach out to the community. And, you know, we did not know much about the grant until recently. You know, some of the staff members sent out the email, say, hey, there are grants here you guys should look into. And we apply and we get small grants, just 5,000, you know, here and there in the next round, and get another 5,000 to do small collection of Hmong people. And we did not realize how much this grant impact the Hmong community and how much this grant impact our youth. The idea is that when you have a lot of youth who are born here in this country, who barely speak the native language anymore. And sometimes when the family are so busy working and taking care of the families, they have no resources where they could look into and books that talk about them, a book that actually share about their culture. So we get small grant and we do, you know, collection about what we do and how they can look into resources that collected by the Hmong Archives and represent who they are. And we published those books, like The Last Refugee of the Hmong Watakabo, who came here in 2004. And we put all that together. And when people see these kind of books that look like them, identify who they are and where they came from, it's just so powerful that you see elders and parents and students looking through and say, hey, this is me when I was a kid. Or, hey, this is my piece of cloth that I had back in the refugee camp. And the idea is not only collect those to preserve the culture and heritage of the Hmong people, but also to share who they are with the mainstream Minnesotan who have no idea who are the Hmong people. And this is one of the great impact of the grant, how it is so important for small nonprofit organizations like the Hmong Archives who preserve and collect about Hmong people, a Hmong story to, you know, for the Hmong people and for the younger generations. And we hope that, you know, we hope that in the future we get more grant to do more work, because we know that there are a lot of grant out, a lot of people applying for it, but we also have many other projects that we want to work with the Minnesota Humanity Centers and trying to, you know, preserve the heritage and culture of the people. So again, on behalf of the Hmong people and the diverse community members in the state of Minnesota, thank you everyone in this zone for your effort, for your time, and for your energy, and for all your support of the Hmong Minnesotan and Minnesotan itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zhang. And it's really neat that you're preserving the artifacts and the stories. And I noticed in your collection, you have a lot of maps. So I'm kind of a map person. I was curious about that. And then you had something that was cards. I don't really know what the cards were, so I was curious. At some point I'll have to visit with you and find out what that is. But thank you for coming this morning, Mr. Zhang. And it's looks like you have quite a collection behind you, sir, of books. So Mr. Lindsay, do you have kind of a wrap, and then we'll kind of get to Representative Erdahl and others?
Yeah, Chair Lilly and members of the committee, I don't have any more of a formal presentation, but I think these grantees just provide just a sliver of the amazing work that has been done. And again, if we were to take a look at the legacy grants, the ARP grants, CARES grants, in totality, we have just been able to hand out about $9 million in total. But the total amount of requests out there is probably three times. And there's 200 applicants, and I know that there's the Hmong Cultural Center is one. I did get a chance to take a look at the four that they've received. They've received about 100,000. So in essence, you know, it's about 1% of what we've been able to hand out. So I just want to be really clear. I applaud them for coming and making their case about wanting to do more. And you're going to hear me sort of say there's a big chorus of organizations out there that could be doing many amazing things. And we want to leverage what we can do at the NEH to do that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Thank you for all your work you do at the Humanities Centers. I know you covered a lot, and you really didn't even get into some of the, I know you do We Are Water and Veterans Voices and
Why Treaties Matter.
And treaties matter, and you know, I mean, there's so many great programs that started with previous chairs before I was, you know, a chair and of this committee. But and you've just been good stewards, and then you kind of captured some of the dilemma of the, you know, the requests, and I mean, it's just monumental. And we have you started off by your bonding, mentioning the building and renovating. We have two former bonding chairs, and it's kind of the same thing in bonding. They just have, you know, tons of requests, and they have to whittle them down. But I'm going to go to questions. Representative Erdahl?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Lindsay, I don't have a question. I just want to take a moment to thank Mr. Lindsay and the Humanities Center for all they've done over the years. I know that when I was chair, I certainly appreciated working with David O'Fallon, who is also from Litchfield, so we have that connection. But and I know that our current chair, Representative Lilly, and past chairs also appreciate the partnership that we've had essentially with the Humanities Center. In many ways, you've helped us make our job easier in distributing this money. Early on, we decided in various areas that we didn't have the mechanism to decide how this money should be distributed. We knew that money needed to go to certain areas, but sometimes we pick out a group, an agency, a department, or whatever, to actually distribute the money and take in the applications. And we do appreciate the work that the Humanities Center has done over the years in helping us with this and being a partner with us in getting legacy money distributed where we think it should go. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Erdahl, and it's so true. But, you know, one of my additions as chair is cultural grants, and it sounds like we're growing into it. And I'm sure the first year you had, you know, we had less money, but then we grew it this year. And it's up to $5 million, and we're hoping to do more. And, you know, I have no doubt in the future. But I'm sure there's growing pains as we're falling into this. But, you know, we need you to help us. And it sounds like you're doing a great job. I'm going to switch over. I don't see any other member questions at this point. I'm going to switch over to we have someone that has some questions or wants to offer some input. Mr. Lee, welcome from the Hmong Cultural Center. And I've had the opportunity to visit your old place when you're upstairs, and I'm looking forward to visiting at your new space. I'm super sorry to hear what you had, some impact damage, you know, right away, and just how sad that is. I don't know if we've caught the people that did that, but it just really broke my heart because you were so fresh and new. And but I know you're doing good work. And Mr. Lee, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also thank you to the rest of the committee today. I'm here to talk about the great work that we're having at the Cultural Center. My name is Song Pao Lee. I'm the executive director of the Hmong Cultural Center in St. Paul in 2022. Our organization is celebrating its 30th anniversary of teaching the Hmong community about Hmong folk art traditional and providing program to teach the broader community about Hmong culture, history, and contribute to the Hmong in Minnesota. Our new storefront museum, 3 blocks away from the state capitol, Warsaw University Avenue. Like you mentioned, you've been stopping in last year, a couple years. So we would like to invite you and other legislature come and visit the new space museum that we said. We thought about it. We're going to launch in December, in September 2021. But the vandalism has been hit hard on the building here. So it has been postponed and opened in late December 2001. So we would like to invite all of you guys come in to visit the new museum, including the general community out there. Given the document cultural racial disparity in art and culture, and legacy funding in Minnesota, and the largely successful effort to ensure a more representative legacy belt in this past cycle, we strongly hope the Minnesota Humanity Center will make every effort to ensure that grant to art and culture organization. And
oh no, did Mr. Lee, you're freezing. Mr. Lee? Oh no. I'll give him a few more seconds. I don't know. Oh, that's unfortunate. Is he frozen on everybody else's screen? Okay. Switching back to Mr. Lindsay, and just want to, you know, thank you and the others that have come, and I certainly respect the challenges of you know, grant challenges, and but I know you're up to the task, and thank you for trying to respect what the House was trying to do with some of the, you know, we had tried to, you know, put different channels into different cultural groups, and it sounds like you're making, you know, you were, you know, listening to those to those words, and you know, it ultimately was not law, but it you know, you tried to work within that some guidance. I see Representative Hassan. Thank you. I see your hand up. Please go ahead with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Lindsay, for your presentation, and I want to thank the community, you know, grantees that came and shared their beautiful stories with us. I just want to make a comment and maybe ask a possible question. What we keep hearing from community members in the, you know, cultural communities is that our way of granting and the system that we have of granting doesn't work for them. There is a scoring, and many people don't want, you know, get enough score to even be considered for the grant, depending on what the process is. So, I mean, while I'm very happy the work that, you know, Mr. Lindsay and his group are doing, and it's a wonderful work that needs to happen, I think, you know, what we need to talk about is the systemic barriers that do exist. Many of the institutions use a system that excludes many BIPOC communities from, you know, accessing resources. And that's a reality for not only for Mr. Lindsay's, you know, institution, but all the institutions that we have. We're hearing from every institute, you know, everyone who's trying to access grants from all the institutions saying that the granting system doesn't work. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, how hard you try. People have to hire grant writers. If you ask me today to write a grant, I guarantee you, your grant won't be accepted because I don't know how to write a grant. So a possible question maybe for Mr. Lindsay is there some assistance with grant writing and grant making that you guys are doing with these entities? Because we want to make sure, I know the money's not enough, and I know that many people applied, and you just have to, you know, you picked the organizations that you picked, and because of the dollar amount that you have. But is there a way that you guys are working with people offline to help them with this grant making process?
Mr. Lindsay, did you hear the question?
I did. So Chair Lilly, Representative Hassan, and then members of the committee, I really appreciate the comment. And Representative Hassan, I appreciate the dialogue that we've had outside of this committee setting of just creating opportunities for folks. So current work, prior work, trying to look at how systems operate and try to create models, and then hoping that influences some of the larger players to adopt some of those things to do differently. So that's how I'm trying to position our work at the Minnesota Humanities Center with some of the larger foundations. The amounts that we're giving, there are foundations that give a lot more than that, than a quarter, right? But I think we can provide an opportunity to showcase some things and doing them differently. Your point concerning applications, for some of our small mini grants, Laura appreciated one that came in literally on a poster board, right, of sort of the response. Now, I'm not saying all of the applications came in that way, but it was the way for that individual to be able to express and visualize and show how their idea for the $2,500 for the smaller grant was going to then work. So we try to bring a great level of intentionality on the applications. Again, for the cultural heritage grants and being specific, we did ask all of the state ethnic councils, we did ask various cultural organizations, how should this application read? What should be the questions? And we really try to bring a lot of intentionality to make it as easy as possible for folks to apply. There's a great comment out there about the challenge of poverty and so many forms and processes being placed upon people who have limited resources. It frustrates their ability to even move forward. So that resonates with us. And Edgar Villanueva's book about foundations and also resonates with us. So we try to bring that to our respective work. So I appreciate the question and appreciate
it. Thank you, Mr. Lindsay. Representative Hassan?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Lindsay. I'm very grateful that you guys are being intentional about the work that you're doing and the grant making, because we're hearing, and not necessarily your entity, but we're hearing a lot of frustration around institutions, because many of these institutions were created not, you know, without the input from BIPOC communities. And even though we're in the 21st century, we still see, you know, systems that exclude BIPOC communities and put them at a disadvantage to access resources and to apply for this, you know, either grants or, you know, resources that they need to sustain. And many of these, you know, entities are the backbone of our communities. They are the frontline workers. They are the firefighters. You know, they're the ones that get the 2 a.m. calls. So, I mean, I will promise to work with you to make sure that we're, you know, trying to look at every possible barrier removed so people can easily access these grants and continue to do the work that they're doing. And thank you for every cultural entity that came and testified today.
Thank you, Representative Hassan and Representative Bo. Good morning. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Lily. Thank you, Chair Lilly. Just a 15-second comment regarding grants. I'm hearing from a lot of counties, for example, that are applying for many grants through the state unsuccessfully. And so perhaps it's time to take a step back and take a deeper look at the grant awarding process across the board, just because there's been a lot of frustration at 87 counties in Minnesota trying to do good in our communities. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Bo and Mr. Lindsay. Thank you for coming this morning and our guests telling the story. Our House researcher or the DFL researcher did a, you know, a deeper dive in some of your programs, Ms. Olson, Mr. Zhang, and I can't see the Somali gentleman, but Anyways, it was just really neat to hear some of the things that you're doing in your programs. And, Mr. Zhang, you're going to have to up your request from five. You're going to have to go a little little bigger next time. No, but you're doing great work. Mr. Lindsay, thank you for what you're doing, your team. And, we weren't able to talk about some of the other things that you work on. And but I know you're doing good work, and it was well set up by previous chairs to work with you folks, but you've been good stewards in helping, previous grants. And then, we also have a bit of a problem, probably brewing in the Children's Museum kind of area that you're helping us with too, because there's so many children's museums out there in different communities. And so we'll have to figure that out into the future as well. And Mr. Zhang, do you have I saw your hand up, and we need to move on, but go ahead, sir.
I just want to take 1 second to share my venues, and I won't take too much time, but I just want to share that, there are a lot of grants out there, and people do compete, and people also have a struggle for prime rent. But from our standpoint and witness, with the Minnesota Community Centers, their grant is the most easiest process for us. Their grant is the most user-friendly ever for us. And the question was basis, the staff was so available, and we have questions that can just right away respond to email or phone. And we did apply all the grants, but the only grant we get is the Minnesota Community Centers, and they are the most easy process. So I just want to share that with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And again, thank you, Mr. Lindsay, for your work with the humanities and your team over there. I know you're doing your best to be good stewards of these public funds, the legacy funds, and we're so blessed that we're able to do a lot of this good work. I know you're available for member questions if they want to reach out to you, and it sounds like your grant process is, especially with the comments from Mr. Zhang at the end there, but are helpful. But thank you, Mr. Lindsay, and we'll
thank you, Chair Lowe, and members of the committee.
So we're going to switch gears here and then move on to Appetite for Change. This is a program that's out doing good work, and it was kind of a strong effort by Vice Chair Jordan to bring that in the fold of the legislature. But I know you were out doing your work previously on your own, but hopefully we've been able to help and enhance. With us this morning, we have Ms. Horowitz, and please go ahead when you're ready, introduce yourself, and excited to hear your story.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Chair Lilly, and thanks, Vice Chair Jordan, for having us here today. I'm accompanied by my silent partner, Ms. LaWanda Warren, who is our she just started and is observing today, but our new vice president of programming, which we're really excited about. She brings decades of experience from working with families and youth and different school systems across the Twin Cities Metro. So some of you may already know her. We're really excited to have her join the team. Excited to be here. Grateful, very, very grateful for this committee, for Representative Jordan bringing forth our legacy request last year, and excited to share with you. I've been listening to the previous presenters, and it's really quite amazing the direction that you all went last year and decisions that you made and the groups that have gotten funded all seem to be really incredible. And I'm personally very excited for our state to have this sort of expanded view, I guess, of the cultural heritage funds. And I know that it was a bit of a stretch potentially for some of you to include cooking and food in the legacy fund appropriations for cultural heritage. But we hope to, in the coming months here, be able to come back again and show you exactly how we are preserving cultural heritage through food. So I would love to share my screen and just show you, for those of you who don't know or need a little bit of a refresher, Appetite for Change is based in North Minneapolis, and we use food as a tool to build health, wealth, and social change. And we are doing that through various programs and social enterprises. We have Breaking Bread Cafe, which is back reopened after quite a while of being closed. So would love to see you all there. In fact, I know we did try to get some of you all to come in a small group, but we couldn't find a date that worked for everybody. And then Omicron and everything. I hope we can still do that later this spring or this summer to give you, you know, a hands-on taste, an experience of what we do at Community Cooks and what your support through this legacy fund is going to allow us to do to expand this program. Basically, the funding that that we have through Legacy Fund is to, let's see if I can expand my screen. Can you all see that? It's like one pager.
Yep.
Okay. So this is what we are currently using to sort of share with community members that we are recruiting to participate in this program. And just to remind you, our Community Cooks is our flagship program where we bring people together to cook, eat, and dialogue. But what we're doing with this program is to really share cultural heritage through food. So using small groups over video and broadcasting that to a much larger population, but videoing hands-on dialogue and cooking and people sharing their cuisine and their cultural heritage through dishes that they've brought to the small group to talk about and to connect and then to broadcast that story. So I know it's always hard when you're talking, but you're not reading the words on the screen and people want to be reading the words on the screen. You know, basically, we are telling the people's food stories from North Minneapolis. North Minneapolis has a very rich cultural history. For the first year of this program, we're focusing exclusively on people who have made an impact in some way, whether it's through their work or through their organizing or through being a community leader, for them to be the focus of. Like, so it's maybe more well-known individuals. We want to attract people. We want to make this something that people want to watch. And so inviting community leaders who have a food story to tell, but who are also talking about the social impact that they're making in the community through their work or through their history of impacting the North Side. And so we're excited to focus specifically on the community leaders. And then in the second year, we're actually expanding it to be a cross-cultural exchange. So intentionally inviting Northside residents from different cultures to share, you know, really specific, because we are just such a melting pot in the community that there's so many wonderful food stories to tell. So the progress that we've made so far and some of the challenges that we've had in implementing as quickly as we had hoped. You know, first and foremost, this is our first direct appropriation from the legislature. So again, thank you for you know, taking a chance on us. And so it took us a bit longer than we had planned to kind of nail down the parameters of exactly what this funding would be used for. We didn't realize we'd be filling out like an application through your system. So it took us a little while to do that. Going back to like the small community-based groups having capacity to do the state grant program and apply for state grants, I echo, I believe it was Representative Beau who, you know, made that really astute comment. Like it is a challenging process across all the state departments, but I will say, this was relatively painless. It's just there was a bit of back and forth in what we were going to measure and what we were actually going to report on. And so we will be sharing the number of views, the number of engagements, and the number of shares that our videos get across all of the different platforms. They'll be on our website, on YouTube, and on social media. And so once we narrow down exactly what we're going to track and exactly how we will use every dollar and budget and everything, Omicron was really starting to become a problem. That was around the same time we were trying to schedule. I actually got our president, Tasha, to like abandon all of the AFC COVID policies and all of the rules. We were not gathering people in person for cooking workshops, but we were going to make an exception for a really small group of you all to, because we really wanted you to just come and experience that, that hands-on cultural knowledge sharing through food. So again, we will make that happen, but Omicron started to become an issue in our own AFC COVID policies. Like I said, our board and leadership had sort of pretty strict rules in place. We were talking about loosening them around when Omicron cropped up. Our community, our organization, maybe more so than other communities or organizations, have been very, I would say, conservative in how people have been re-entering society and engaging publicly and being comfortable sharing physical spaces with one another, especially youth. And so I know I don't have to tell you guys all this, but I think things are changing and seem to be, you know, all signs seem to be pointing towards, you know, it'll be safe for us to do this. So we're really, really excited to actually bring folks together. We have our virtual cooking studio selected. We have our dates picked out. We have, they have an amazing green screen that we're going to play around with and to have like really inviting, basically virtual backgrounds that really makes it look like you are in a living room, in someone's kitchen, in their home, sharing these cultural stories. So the small group is doing that on screen, but you, as the viewer, you're able to like even feel like you're part of the conversation as well. So, I don't want to take too much time because I know you guys are probably a bit behind schedule, but I am happy to answer any questions, talk about, you know, anything that is on your minds or concerns or issues that you may have.
But, thank you, Ms. Horowitz.
And it is Horowitz with a V.
Horowitz, okay.
Yep, no worries. But yes, and thank you so much again, Chair Lilly and Vice Chair Jordan, for this opportunity. It's been a slow start, but we're really, really excited to come back and testify again, or at least just invite you guys all to experience it for yourselves.
Thank you, Ms. Horowitz. It's neat to hear your story of what you're working on. Vice Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Horowitz. This is great to hear. I guess my question is just, what's on the menu? You know, you have all these things planned. What are people cooking? What are people eating? What are some of the stories that people are sharing?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wish I could tell you exactly what's on the menu, but I know so far we're getting a lot of like really very deep-rooted recipes that have been held in families for generations. Obviously there's some, you know, traditional things with greens, and we actually have an amazing black eyed pea recipe that we do at Community Cooks that, you know, we could potentially share. You know, as we've talked about Tasha being one of the leaders that is in the first initial group, because she was born and raised on the North Side. She's the president of Appetite for Change, and just like kicking it off, we thought that might be fun. But yeah, I wish I could tell you all of the stories and all the food, but we're collecting that now, and our first workshop will be in May.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Horowitz, for this. I have been, ever since we've been doing this, I've been just thinking about how our culture is so connected to food, and in every culture, there's such a food connection. And so I've been thinking every time someone invites me to their home or I see something's on the menu, I was thinking about this recently during Lunar New Year, where I saw so many of my friends making dumplings, or on Christmas Eve when people were making tamales, or just even going out for Chinese food on Christmas Day after seeing a movie. These are all really unique, important parts of our culture that are so tied to food. So thank you so much for all of your work and for sharing all of this culture with everyone in Minneapolis. We really appreciate you and Appetite for Change.
Thank you so much. And I'm personally really looking forward to the second wave of our workshops when we will be doing that cross-cultural exchange, and there'll be recipes from all the cultures represented in North Minneapolis and Minnesota more broadly, because we are sort of a microcosm of many, many of the areas.
Right. I see a hand from Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Chair. I was actually commuting my way to the SOB, so I did not get to raise my hand to ask a question to the earlier testifiers. And if you are okay, I just want to quickly say something that while it was great hearing from the other organizations funded by the humanities, we have also heard from other smaller organizations who have been around and have not received funds. And it's important for us to hear their voices. I was a little bit disappointed that we couldn't get Mr. Lee back to testify, because he was among one of the few organizations who contacted us about barriers to accessing funds through the humanities. And so, Mr. Chair, it's my hope that we can continue to have this conversation with the humanities and our other smaller BIPOC organizations to ensure that they also have equal access to the funds here.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. Yes, it was unfortunate that Mr. Lee's connection failed us at the worst of times. So that was too bad. But hopefully we've already asked for his testimony and comments to be sent to all members and to the humanities. So Ms. Horowitz, thank you very much. I certainly wish we were in person, because I just would love, we have just to have, I'm sure you'd bring in some food or something. We'd have the smells that are just so marvelous. And speaking of the connections through food, it's so healthy. I'm so lucky. In my other life, I work at a major airline, and we have a very diverse team that we're working with, Hmong folks, Filipinos, Somali, Romano, and Mexico. Spanish, people, it's just, the foods are just marvelous. And it's quite common for us to have a food day or to share. And there's stuff that I've loved that I never expected, and some that I could probably live without too. But it's, and I'm sure they would say the same of some of my lutefisk or something. No, but Representative Jordan, do you have any additional comments, Vice Chair Jordan, or you're good there?
No, I just wanted to thank the committee for listening to Appetite for Change and for funding this program. It's really great to hear about it.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. And Ms. Horowitz, thank you for coming this morning and telling your story. And I certainly hope myself and all of our committee, I'm hoping that during session here, we can maybe, as the weather warms up, we can get out and maybe do a road trip and some of the local recipients. And have a tour, and certainly would like to stop. I was particularly, reading about your program, the gardens. I didn't realize you had so many community gardens, and then feeding over 400 people a week. And I mean, you just think about that, and with food insecurity and helping families, 400 meals a week. Families helping 400 families. That's incredible. So.
Thank you. Thank you again so much. And I hope that you all can come to the cafe, and maybe even if the pandemic allows, like even a larger group. I think we were only going to be able to have like six of you or seven of you, but maybe we could even get a larger group together. And would love to see an episode of our program where you're sharing lutefisk and another culture is sharing their food, and we can all learn.
Right. Vice Chair Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let me know when you do lutefisk day, because I think I'll skip that one. But
fair enough.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. One other thing I just wanted to tell committee members is that Appetite for Change does so much for education too. All of their advocacy for school nutrition and school meals is another area where I'm just so proud of them. And we know that when we're feeding children, we're improving their learning outcomes, we're improving literacy outcomes. And this, I just think Appetite for Change just does a great job of integrating the connection between food and culture and food and education and food and safety. So I wanted committee members to think about that as well. And again, extend a thank you to Appetite for Change.
Thank you, Vice Chair Jordan. And again, thank you, Ms. Horowitz and Appetite for Change for stopping in. And it's good to hear the story of what you're doing and how you're responding to the COVID times and moving past that.
Thank you. Thank you all.
So thank you, members. As you all know, we've in the last couple of days, we've had the new financial forecast. And so it'll be interesting to see what that means to the to our funds. Yesterday in the Environment Committee, they moved to, and we have quite a few members of this committee that are members of that committee, pretty similarly overlapped, but they worked on the Lessard-Sams bill and had some very good questions. So members, you have an opportunity to watch their meeting. I think it was a good discussion on the Lessard-Sam portion of the funds, and that bill's gonna be coming to us. And then, so we need to, you know, look at what we're doing with that. And I know Lead Green has, he said he has a few questions. again, thank you all for this morning, and thank you for presenters. And if you do have questions, I know from hearing from Mr. Lindsay, he's definitely, the humanities are open to questions and then to deeper dives to hear how it's going. And I know that's a new program, but it sounds to me like they're giving it a good effort. With that, members, I don't see any member questions. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.